Now, we're holding the last words of Kuf Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So we learned as follows. We were discussing the point, what happens if somebody says, he says that I want my nechosim to go to you, Reuven, and then after you, Reuven, die, then I want it to go to Shimon. Actually, in the Mishnah, we had talked about how Kosev Nechosev Levana, if a person writes out his Nechosim, are going to go to his son, then during as long as the father is alive, the son can't unilaterally sell it, neither can the father. And we talked about, because one owns the Guf, one owns the Peiris, and we talked about what happens if he does. So in particular, we had a Machloikas, Rabbi Yechon, and Rish Lakish on the question, when a person has Kinyan Peiris, is it considered like Kinyan Aguf? Rabbi Yochanan holds that yes. So therefore, in the example of the father and the son, since the father has the peiros, to a certain extent, he also has ownership of the guf. To the extent, in other words, that if the son were to die if the son were to sell it to somebody else and then die while his father is still alive, we wouldn't say it would go to the one he sold it to. Rather, it would revert to the father, and then it would end up going to the father's other yoshim. Because since the father has kinyan peiros, so therefore it's considered as though he has a certain kinyan aguf as well. So that overrides the fact that the other guy bought it from him. And Rish Lakish says that kinyan peiros is not the kinyan aguf, and therefore that it would end up staying by the people who bought it. And we were discussing that as far as Bikurim. And the last thing was, Rabbi Yochanan had said to Rish Lakish, we have a braisa that says that if a person says, Nechose lechova acharecha yirash ploini, he says, I'm giving my nechosin to you, Reuven, and after Reuven dies, I want ploini to get it, and after that, I want Shimon to get it, and after that, I want Levi to get it. So we said, if Shimon dies while Levi is alive, while Reuven is alive, then it goes, later on, Reuven himself dies as well, then it goes to his Yoshim. So the question is, why does it go to the Yoshim of Reuven when it should go to the Yoshim, according to you, the Shlokish, it should go to the Yoshim of the original giver, because once Reuven dies and Shimon's not available to get it from him anymore because Shimon is dead as well, then it should go back. If you say Kinyan Peiros is not the Kinyan Aguf, then it should go all the way back to the original Nosin. To the original giver. So Rish Lakish had said that it's different, a case of Acharecha is different. So the Gemara now asks a question, which who is this question on? Well, first let's learn the question and then we'll see. So the Gemara asks, V'hotanyu yachzru l'yoshin noisin. The question now is, we have a Braisa that in fact says it does go to the Yoshim of the giver. Now, that would be a question on Rabbi Yochanan then that you're saying Acharecha Shaini, but nevertheless even though you can say, as the Gemara had just answered, Acharecha Shaini, it's different in a case of Acharecha. And Rish Lakish used that to answer that's why that case is not a contradiction to me. But Rabbi Yochanan still would have to say that it goes back to the original. Rabbi Yochanan would still have to say that it goes back to the original giver. So now the question is, we have a braisa that says that if Shimon dies while Reuven is alive, then in fact it does go back to the Yoshim of the giver. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it should go to the Yoshim of Reuven because Reuven had Kinyan Peiros. It should be considered Kinyan Aguf, and therefore it should go to his Yoshim. Rabbi Yochanan had used the previous braisa to ask on Rish Lakish to say, why is it going to Yoshim Rishon when according to you it should go to Yoshim Noisin? And Rish Lakish answers because it's different in the case of Acharecha. But now we have a braisa where Rabbi Yochanan would have said, well, there's no question. It goes to Yoshe Rishon because the Rishon has Peiros and he has Kinyan Aguf, therefore. But now if we have a braisa that says Yachsu L'Yoshe Noisin, then how is Rabbi Yochanan going to understand that braisa? So according to the Rashbam, the question is on, Rabbi Yochanan. Tosfos points out, though, that's not really a question. We have there's a lot of different Tanoim in various places who discuss whether Kinyan Peiros or Kinyan Aguf. So why is it a problem? The Gemara is going to end up answering that there was a Machloikas Tanoim about this, but the Gemara didn't even need that. We know there's a Machloikas Tanoim on this from many other places. Tosfos explains that actually the question is on Rish Lakish. The question is as follows. You're saying that a case of Acharecha is a special case. So now, if you say that, I would say, Rish Lach, I would say, says Rabbi Yochanan, that to me it doesn't make a difference, acharecha or not. Either way, it goes to the Yoshe Rishon, it goes to Reuven Yoshin, because he has king in Paris, and that's considered like Kenyan Aguf. So either way then, so therefore, and sure, fine, I know there are other Tanoim who hold differently, but at least we could say that the Braisa that says Yachsu, the Yoshi Rishon, would be one of the Tanoim who holds, like I do, Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf. But if you're going to tell me that that usually we would say that it usually you, the Shlokish, are saying it's not Kikinin Aguf, but Acharecha is different, but we have a Braisa that says you give it to the Yoshe Noisin, and what does that mean? Is that Tana going to hold that Acharecha, that Acharecha is meaningless? We never find a machlokas about that. So therefore, so the Gemara is going to answer, now here, Rish Tosfos has a slightly different girsa than the Rashbam. The next words of the Gemara, Tanoihi, is the Girsa of the Rashbam. The Gemara has asked a question on Rabbi Yochanan, and the answer is it's in fact Machlokas Tanoim, and therefore a Braisa that says Acharecha, a Braisa that says Yachzu, the Yoshe Noisin, is not a contradiction on Rabbi Yochanan, because it'll just mean that it's according to one Tana, and Rabbi Yochanan is going according to another Tana. Tosfos is going to have the Girsa Ella Tanoihi. Rather, you're going to have to say that it's machlokas tanoim. The difference of that word ella means that we're saying, therefore, that yes, the earlier braisa is in fact like Rish Lakish, and therefore, so it's not, it doesn't contradict Rish Lakish. And as far as what you're saying, what we just said, that there were amiroyim who said acharecha is different, that itself is the subject of a machlokas tanoim. So, in other words, here the Shlokishan answered Acharecha Shaini. The Gemara points out you should realize that actually there's Machlokas Tanoim on that, but nevertheless that doesn't create a problem for the Shlokish, because the previous Braisa in fact does go straight according to him. Then on top of that there's a Gilya and there's a parenthesis in Tosfos, which Marsha brings in, and then afterwards it was printed over here as a parenthetical note in Tosfos. That explains further that even according to Rabbi Yochanan, when it comes to there would be another way of understanding the Gemara more similar to what the Rashbam says, is that even they are in fact arguing about the status of Acharecha, and even according to Rabbi Yochanan would have to say they're arguing about that rather than that they're arguing about Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf. So in other words, here the Rashbam is saying that the question was on Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan is going to have to answer. The fact is, there's machlokas on that subject. Now this Julian in Tosfos is going to say that no, the machlokas is not really on that. It's really going to be on the status of Acharecha. What happens when he says Acharecha? What kind, to what degree of kinyan does the one whom he gave it to first, Reuven, to what degree of kinyan does he have on those nechassim in terms of what's going to go to Shimon afterwards? In any case, so the Gemara answers Tanoim. So it's a Machlokas Tanoim. So again, according to Rashbam, the point of saying it's a Machlokas Tanoim is we're going to have a Machlokas about this point of whether Kinyan Peres is Kinyan Aguf. According to Tosfos, and according to the Gilead of Tosfos, rather it's going to be to discuss the question of what's the status of Acharecha when he says, I'm giving to you an Acharecha after the first recipient, after Reuven dies, it should go to Shimon, etc. What degree of Kinyan does Reuven have on it? So to Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Nechose Lachova Acharecha Lepoini, if the giver of the Matana says that I'm giving my Nechosin to you, Reuven, V'Acharecha Lepoini, and after you die, I want it to go to Shimon, the Yorad Rishon Umocha V'Ochal. Now, if during the time when Reuven had the property, if he went into the property, and he sold things, and he went into the nechassim and he sold the nechassim to others, the ochal, and then he consumed the money. So in other words, we're talking about that, so he figures I'm the owner of it right now as long as I'm alive. So therefore, I have the right to go and sell it to somebody else, and I have the right to do whatever I want with the money. The Rashbam learns that there's no difference actually whether he used up the money or not. It's just typically when a person sells it, then it means he's going to end up using the money for his expenses or for other things like that. So the money is not going to be the ain anymore. The Tosfos Reed actually learns that there would be a difference. If the money was still there, or if he bought something with it, But if he bought an asset with it, which is still available, then in fact you would have to then in so here we're going to talk about what happens according to the Shimon. So let's learn the Braisa first, then actually we'll talk about those different understandings. So anyway, so Yorub Yishun Machav Achal, so the first one goes and sells the property and then consumes the money. Hashedi Motim Yabalakuchas Divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe says the second one, namely Shimon, is going to be able to take that back from the buyers, because after Reuven dies and Shimon is supposed to get it, so the buyers are going to say, wait, we bought it from Reuven, but Shimon is going to say, well, tough luck to begin with. I was told that I'm going to get these nechosim after Reuven dies, and therefore he didn't have the right to sell them. So that would be, in other words, Rebbe would hold Kinyan Peiris Lavka Kinyan Aguf. So that would be more like Rish Lakish. But that would be what we meant when we said it's Macholikas Tanoim. Again, following the Rashbam's understanding that the point of the Gemara bringing this in is to establish that there are different Tanoim who hold different opinions about Kinyan Peiris. So far Rish Lakish would hold like Rebbe. But the Braisa continues, Reb Shimon Gamliolayma Ein Masheni Elamasha Shiyurishin. Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that no, the second one, Shimon, is only going to be able to have whatever is left by the first one, whatever still exists in Reuven's possession when he died. So if he didn't leave anything, then there's nothing left. So that would be according to Reb Yochanan. So therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel and Reb Yochanan would be saying the same thing. So before, when we had a Braisa, when the Gemara had brought a Braisa, Yachsu, the Yoshe Noisin, so fine, that opinion would be saying, Kinyan Peiris, Lavka Kinyan Aguf, that opinion would be like Rebbe in this Braisa over here. Meanwhile, Rish Lakish would say, first of all, I have Rebbe's opinion, but second of all, anyway, Acharecha is a special case. That's not necessarily would we say, so, not necessarily would we say always, Kinyan Peiris, maybe normally we would say Kinyan Peiris, Kinyan Aguf, like Rav Shimon Gamliel says, but in a case of Acharecha, Rebbe might say differently, and Rish Lakish would say, I also say differently. So, in fact, the Rashbam explains in some detail over here that Rabbi Yochanan would have to understand that that's the point. Rabbi Yochanan would have to understand that the underlying machloikus of Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is about Kinyan Peiris to Kinyan Aguf. Rish Lakish would say that no, they both agree that Kinyan Peiris lav to Kinyan Aguf. They both agree with that. The machloikus is that what happens when he tells him acharecha, when he tells the Reuven, you're going to have it, and after you die, it's going to go to Shimon, is that Rebbe would hold that in a case of Acharecha also it's only a Kinyan Peiris, and therefore Rebbe would say well, you only have Kinyan Peiris, it's not the Kinyan Aguf, so therefore the Lakochas, or the people who bought it from Reuven, are going to have to give it back because Shimon is supposed to get it, because he's supposed to have the Guf. And then it would mean also that then if Shimon had died while Reuven was alive, then it would mean we wouldn't give it to Reuven's Yoshim, because Reuven never had the Guf. He only had Kinyan Peiris. Kinyan Peiris lavka Kinyan Aguf. So therefore it goes back to the Yoshim of the original giver. Reb Shimon Gamliel would say that generally Kinyan Peiris lavka Kinyan Aguf, but in the case of Acharecha is different. There he means to give both the Guf and the Peiris, and therefore Reb Shimon Gamliel would say that therefore the first one has the right to sell whatever he wants, because he has the Guf after all. And as far as Yoshim, then it's going to go to the Yoshim of Reuven. And that way, the Rashbam points out, we have to say like that, we have to say that Rav Shimon Gamliel is not just going exclusively, we have to say rather that Rish Lakish is not going exclusively according to Rebbe, because in this is one of those three cases, as we learned yesterday, where the halacha is like Rish Lakish, well, also the halacha, as the Gemara is going to say soon, is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So if you're going to say that, if you're going to say that Rish Lakish can be only according to Rebbe, then how would the halacha be able to be according to him? So therefore, we have to understand it that way. Then the Rashbam goes on to point out that also from the continuation of the Gemara, from the various things that it's going to bring further, that the Gemara is going to bring next, a bias statement and a case involving Rabbi Abaye and Amar Beis, all of that shows that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Anyway, so again, all of that is according to the Rashbam, and then according to Tosfos, you have a different understanding of the sugya, that the question to begin with was on Rish Lakish, not on Rabbi Yochanan, and the answer is that, in fact, Rish Lakish, and the answer is, as the Rashbam is saying, that Rish Lakish himself would say the Machlokas is not on Kinyan Peiris, Kinyan Aguf, but rather on what's the story with Acharecha. Is he giving him only the Peiris, or is he giving him the Guf as well? So the Gemara says Uramini. Now, so far so good. So we have Rebbe saying that. The first one has no right to sell it, and therefore if he did, then the second one Shimon is entitled to take it away from them. And Shimon Gamliel had said that not. So again, according to the Rashbam, Rabbi Yochanan would understand the two opinions to be arguing on Kinyan Peres to Kinyan Aguf, and Rish Lakish would say they both agree, Kinyan Peres, Lavka, Kinyan Aguf, and the question is, did he give him only the Peres, or did he give him the Guf? But now, the Gemara says, Uramini, but I have another contradiction, because another Braisa says, Nechose l'chova acharecha l'ploini, if the guy says, I'm giving my Nechosim to you, and, so again, before we get to that, actually, when we said, Umocha v'ochal, we said, where Reuven sold and ate the money, meaning, in other words, that he used it up, so the Rashbam says, that doesn't really make a difference. Just generally, when a person sells, then it often means that afterward, the money, he's gonna end up spending on other things, and he doesn't have it available. On the other hand, the Tosfos Reed says that not. If the money is available, or if there's a tangible asset that he bought with it, then there's no question that Shimon would be getting it anyway. The question is, if now he used it up, so now there's nothing left, then we have the Machlokas, where Reb Shimon Gamliel would say that the second one has on that Shimon gets only what Reuven left over. Anyway, so the Gemara says a Ramini. The Gemara says I have a contradiction, because another Braisa says, Nechose l'chov acharecha l'ploini, if a person says, I'm giving my Nechosim to you, Reuven, and after you die, it's going to Ploini, to Shimon, Yodad Rishon, Umoicha v'oichel divrei Rebbe, then Rebbe says the first one, Reuven, can go in there and sell it and consume the food, and consume the money, rather, and use up the money, divrei Rebbe, Reb Shimon Gamliel, and Eim L'Rishon, El Achilas Peres Vovad. And Reb Shimon Gamliel says that the first one, Reuven, only has the right to eat Peres from this property. So, Kasha de Rebbe, Ad Rebbe, or de Reb Shimon Gamliel, Ad Reb Shimon Gamliel. So now we have Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel seem to be contradicting their own statements, because in the previous Braisa, Rebbe was saying that he has no right to sell it, and the Lekuchas can take it away after Reuven dies, or rather, Shimon can take it away from the Lekuchas after Reuven dies. Here we're saying in the second Braisa that Rebbe is saying Reuven does have every right to sell it. Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying in the first Braisa that second one Shimon is able to get only what Reuven, the first one, left over. And now he's saying that he only has the right to begin with to eat the Peres. So the answer is, a de Rebbe ad de Rebbe loikasha, Rebbe is not contradicting himself, because holigufa holipera, because there's a difference between whether he's selling the guf of the property itself or the payers. So when we talk about that, when Rebbe had said in the earlier braisa that Shimon will be able to take away from the lekuchas, means the guf, because the guf the guf was not Reuven's to give away, because Rebbe had held kinyan payers lavka kinyan aguf. Either according to Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he had held that, that Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Aguf. So Reuven had no right to sell the Guf in the first place. So therefore, the actual land itself, for example. So therefore, Shimon can take it away from the buyers. Paul Pera, but when we talk about that, when Rebbe is saying that the first one can go and sell and consume the money, means he can sell the Peres. Well, very well. So he owns the Peres. So therefore, he's able to sell the Peres. Now, the fact that he can sell the Peres themselves, the Rimi Gash points out, is not a chiddush. Of course, that's it was given to him for purposes of the Peres. The point is, in other words, that he's able to sell the karka for the Peres. It means, in other words, it's not just that obviously he can pick the Peres every year and he can do whatever he wants with them. They're his. They're a matana. The point is, the Rimi Gash says that it means also he's able to go and tell somebody else, I am selling you the guf of the karka only as far as the Peres, meaning the right that I have on this karka to be able to get the pay, to be able to harvest the Peres from it every year, I'm transferring that right to you. And he has the ability to do that even though he doesn't have the guf. So that would be Rebbe. So therefore, Rebbe's not contradicting himself. Reb Shimon Gamliel, other Reb Shimon Gamliel, like Kasha, as far as Reb Shimon Gamliel, there's also no contradiction in what he's saying, holachatchila hodiyeven. Because Reb Shimon is saying lachatchila, even though, again, according to Reb Yochanan, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that he does own the guf by virtue of owning the Peres, because Kinyan Peres ke Kinyan aguf. According to the Shlokish, rather, we would say, he says Kinyan Peres lav ke Kinyan aguf, but in this case, he was given the guf and the Peres. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon Gamliel would be saying that still lachatchila, since after all, the original giver planned that eventually it should go to Shimon, then Reuven shouldn't just be going and unilaterally selling the guf. Because you want, after all, that what the Noisin said should end up happening. He did want, after all, he wanted something to be left over for Shimon. So therefore, so it's not right for Reuven to go and sell it. So we're saying that so when Shimon Gamliel says Ein L'Rishit, but he would agree that B'dieved. But he would agree that if it was done, then it's chal. So therefore, so in the first braisa, when Shimon Gamliel says Ein L'Rishin, Ein L'Sheni, Ein L'Mashish Yerishin, Shimon is going to get only what Reuven left for him, means, well, b'dieved. If Reuven sold it, then there may be nothing left for Shimon. But then in the second braisa, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying Ein L'Rishin, Ela Achilas Peres Belvad, meaning not that in fact the only thing he's able to do is Achilas Peres, but that's the only thing he should be doing. He should be eating only the Peres and leaving the entire goof intact for Shimon to get after Reuven dies. And in fact, in this connection, Omar Abaya, Ezehu Rosha Orum, what does it mean, a crafty Rosha? Now, you have a Mishnah in Soita that mentions such a person as one of a category of people who are Mevalei Olam. They damage and destroy the world. So one example it mentions over there is Rosh HaOrum, a crafty Rosh. So Gemara has several definitions of it over there. And one of them is, Zeh HaMashi Eitzel, Limka B'Nachasim, Kid of Shimon Gamliel. That would be somebody who gives advice to Reuven, in our scenario, to sell the Nachasim and follow the and according to Reb Shimon Gamliel. Now, the halacha, in fact, as the Gemara is going to say in the next line, is like Reb Shimon Gamliel. But if you have somebody advising Reuven, go and sell this property, you may as well, because that way, because according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, you're allowed to, you have the ability to, and then Shimon won't get anything. Nevertheless, so the person who gives him advice to do that is called a Rosha Orum. He's a Rosha because he's trying to undo what the original giver did. The original giver wanted something to go to Shimon, and here he's making it not happen. And he's Orum, he's crafty in the sense like he's not even gaining from it. So the Rashbam learns that, and it's Orum in the sense it is effective. It's not like we say that it's not going to be effective. But it's called Choyte V'loy Loy. In effect, he's doing an Aveira where he's not even gaining anything from it. Now, the Rashbam learns that the seller himself is not actually doing anything wrong in that case. Reuven himself is not necessarily actually doing anything wrong, because the fact is, it's not such a serious issue. He did give him the payers, and to a certain extent, the goof, that he can do whatever he wants with. So therefore, so he himself wouldn't be a Rosha for doing that, but whoever advises him to is a Rosha, because you're not even gaining from it. That's according to the Rashbam. The Meiri actually learns that even the seller himself, Reuven himself, would be considered a Rosha because, yes, he has the right to do it, but nevertheless, that's not what implicitly he was told not to do that. Implicitly he was told, save it for Shimon, and he's failing to do that, and he's thinking, I can get around that, and therefore, the Meiri holds he himself would be called a Rosha or Reuven as well. All right, the Gemara continues. The bottom line is the halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel, so therefore if Reuven does go and sell, then Shimon is not going to end up getting anything of it. He may be, whoever is involved over here may be a Rosha, but nevertheless it does work. Again, the Rashbam points out, this goes to show that according to Rish Lakish, there must be a way of explaining Reb Shimon Gamliel as holding Kinyan Peres Lav to Kinyan Aguf, because ultimately the halacha is like Rish Lakish. That is the halacha, like Rish Lakish. And if we were to say that Reb Shimon Gamliel holds Kinyan Peres to Kinyan Aguf, then we would have a contradiction as far as what the actual halacha is. So Reb Yochanan is entitled to understand Reb Shimon Gamliel to be saying Kinyan Peres to Kinyan Aguf, but the halacha is not like that. The halacha is like Rish Lakish's understanding of Reb Shimon Gamliel. The Gemara continues, Reb Yochanan continues, Reb Shimon Gamliel would agree with the Chachamim, Shem Nostin Matnas Shchivmana, that if to begin with the gift that we're talking about over here, Acharecha, was not a Matnas Bori, but rather a Matnas Shchivmana, when the giver figures that he's about to die, then Lo Osa Klum, then what he did doesn't count for anything, I misunderstood that. Rather, Moder, when Reb Shimon Gamliel would be Moder, Shem Nostin Matnas Shchivmana, that if Reuven, not the original giver, if Reuven gave it as a matnas shchivmara. So in other words, all this time we've been talking about, if Reuven takes these nechosim and he gives it or sells it to somebody else. So we're saying that the Eved of Shimon Gamliel would say that it is a valid gift or sale, because again, he has the payrus, he has to a certain extent, he has the guf, and therefore he has the right. But Reb Shimon Gamliel would agree, says Reb Yechanan, that if Reuven gave it as a matnas shchivmara, then it wouldn't work. Lo yosa klum, it wouldn't work, and Shimon would end up getting it.
Well, my time, why is that? Because a matnas shchimina takes effect only after the shchimina dies, unlike a matnas bodi, which takes effect right away. And you already have that there was the original giver, the one from whom Reuven received it in the first place, had already said, acharecha, after you, Reuven, die, then it should go to Shimon. So therefore, in effect, Shimon gets it the moment that Reuven dies, and meanwhile, it's another moment until the matnas shchimera takes effect. It's not even another moment. They both happen at the same instant, but the fact is that both of them take effect at the same instant, but meanwhile, you already have both of them take effect at the same moment, then therefore the acharecha overrides the other one, and the result is that Shimon is going to get it, because it's one thing, in other words, when he says Reuven gives it away while he's alive, fine, as long as he's alive he has the right to it, but as soon as he dies that right to it goes away, and therefore the acharecha takes effect. The Tosfos Reed actually has a very interesting explanation of it, that generally speaking, when a person dies, it takes a certain period of time. A person's limbs stop working, and then eventually you have paralysis or whatever, and over time, eventually he dies. So in effect, what you have is when that process of him dying begins, then that's when he loses the right to these nechassim, and then when he ends. And that would be when he's actually dead, that's when the matnas shchimera would take effect. But then by that time, it's too late, because already he lost ownership of it from when he started dying. That's how the Tosfos Reed learns. But the Rashbam is saying you don't really need that. It's more they do both happen at the same time. But the fact is that the Rashbam just says, actually generically, he says from when the first one no longer needs these nechassim, so maybe he would agree with that. That it means, in other words, once he's starting to die, then already he doesn't really need those nechassim anymore. Now what happens is that the acharecha takes precedence over the fact that he wanted to give it as a matnas shchimera. Well, the Gemara asked him, "Mi Omer Abaya Hochi? Did Abaya really say that? At what point does a matnas shchimera take effect? Abaya Omer in Gemar Misa. Abaya says when he finishes dying, the moment he dies." The Rava Amalacha Gmar Misa. Rava says after he finishes dying. So Abaya would say the moment he dies. Rava would say a moment later. So therefore, so according to Abaye, the matnas shchimera and the acharecha are supposed to happen at the same moment. So if it's the same moment, then it should be a matter of suffix. And we should say that we should split it. We would split it between the one that he gave it to as a matnas shchimera and Shimon, because it would be a suffix which one. Now, you have two things that happen in the same instant. According to Rava, we would say that fine. It means that first you have the acharecha took effect and Shimon is supposed to get it. A moment later, because the moment he dies, then acharecha takes effect. A moment later after Gmar Misa would be when his matnas shchimera would take effect. And by that time, it's too late. But according to Abaye, if they happen at the same instant, then we should say that in that case it would be a suffix. So the Gemara answers, Hodebe Abaye Me'ahi. In fact, Abaye changed his mind about this machloikus with him and Rava, whether it takes effect at the moment he dies or whether it takes effect a moment later. So therefore, Abaye changed his mind, and therefore, yeah, you do have a moment over there between when the acharecha kicks in, which is the moment he dies, versus when the matnas shchimera should kick in, which would be a moment later. And therefore, there's no room for the matnas shchimera to take effect because the acharecha has already taken effect. Well, the Gemara asks me, "Mai d'mai hi hodebe?" Fine, if you have a contradiction in two statements of Abaye, one about that, and one about that if he gives it as a matnas shchimera, then he's kona, we're saying, what did we say? Abaye had said the reason why if Reuven gives it as a matnas shchimera doesn't work is because by the time it's going to take effect as a matnas shchimera, when he dies, it's too late, because acharecha has already taken effect. We're saying that's contradicted by the fact that he disagrees with Rava and says that the Matan Shchivna takes effect the moment the guy dies, and we're saying he changed his mind on that one where he argues with Rava. How do you know? Maybe he still holds that it takes effect the moment he dies, and he changed his mind on the other thing and said that Rav Shimon Gamliel would in fact allow the Matan Shchivna to go through in this case as well, even when there's Acharecha. So how do we know that Robert changed? How do we know that Abaya changed his mind on the one that he argues with Rava? The answer is Loisachadaitach. You can't think that he's arguing on that one. Ditnan, because it would be similar to what we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin. If a person says Zeg Gittich in Mati, he says to his wife, "This is my get. This is your get if I die." Zeg Gittich Mecholi Zeh, or he says, "This is your get." So in other words, he's saying, "If I die, then it should be a get." Or he says, "This is your get if I don't recover from this illness." Or he says, "This is your get, and it takes effect after I die." In all those cases, lo yom aklum, then it doesn't work, because the get is only going to take effect after he dies, and get la'achamisa. So now the Rashbam points out that the Gemara in Gittin over there points out, we learned about Rabbi Yossi's opinion that about Zmanish or Shtar Mechiach Olav, that when you have a date in a Shtar, then that demonstrates you wanted the Shtar to take effect as of that date. So therefore, according to him, those wouldn't be an issue, because the date on the get will show when he wanted it to take effect, and that would be before he died. But according to the Chachamim, who disagree with according to Rabbi Yehuda in particular, who disagrees with Rabbi Yossi, would say that you can't look at the date of the shtar. The fact is, he said that it should take effect la'achamisa, whichever of these lishonos he used, and get la'achamisa. So the result is, so in other words, the same way as when he says zeg gitach imati, we assume that it means only after he dies. He doesn't mean the moment he dies or a moment before he dies. He means after, and therefore it can't take effect because in get lachamisa. By the same token, a matnas shchivna, when he's saying it takes, by definition, a matnas shchivna takes effect when he dies, then it means it actually takes effect a moment after he dies. And in that case, since we have Acharecha involved over here, then it's too late, because at the point when the Acharecha already takes effect the actual moment he dies, because Acharecha means after you, meaning as soon as you're gone, and therefore his Matnas Shchivna, which is going to take effect right after that, has no room to be chal. So therefore it has to be on the basis of that Abaya would have to agree with that, since it's based on a Mishnah in Gittin, and therefore he can't be arguing with Rava anymore, therefore we have to say he changed his mind on that. And therefore, the result is Sabaya is now being consistent. So therefore, Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that in the case where the original giver said Acharecha, and then Reuven meanwhile went and gave it as a matnas shchivna, it wouldn't work. And therefore, we would say that the Acharecha takes precedence, because the matnas shchivna of Reuven is going to take effect only a moment later, so it's going to end up going to Shimon. Okay. The Gemara continues. So before we said Rabbi Yochanan had said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so now the Gemara continues that Rabbi Zera says in Rabbi Yochanan's name that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Not only that, that the second one gets only whatever the first one left over. So if the first one went and sold the property, if Reuven went and sold the property, b'di'evid, then Shimon can't get anything from it. But Rabbi Zera is adding the detail, v'afilo hoya behen avodim v'hotzien l'cheiros. That would apply even if the nechasim that Reuven had received as a gift, even if they included avodim knanim, which he went and freed, even so, we would still, when Shimon Gamliel is saying that the second one gets only whatever the first one left, it includes even that case. Isn't that obvious? Why would we think that's any different than anything else? And the answer is Mao de Tema Omalei. You might think that maybe Shimon can say, Lemevedi Surah Lo Yavin Loch, look, you weren't given it in order to do an Isser, because after all, to free an Eved Kanani, unless there's a valid reason, is being over on a mitzvah sase. The Torah says, La'olam Behem Ta'avoidu, you should have an Eved Kanani work for you forever, unless there's a good and valid reason, which we learned a couple of them in Gittin a while back. Then he's not supposed to free the Eved Kanani. One example we had over there is that Rabbi Eliezer freed his Eved Kanani to make a minion. We talked about over there, you have a case involving a Shifcha Kananis where people are being Mazana with her, etc. So you have a few cases where you could, but ordinarily you're not supposed to. So therefore, so Shimon can argue, wait a minute, when the guy gave you the nechassim, sure, you have the right to sell them and to do whatever you want, even though it was supposed to eventually go to me. Fine, I understand. You have a certain kinyan of it. But to the extent where he would allow you to do an issur with it, not necessarily. So therefore, maybe that sale of that freeing of the eved shouldn't take effect, and I should be entitled to that nechassim. Therefore, Rav Zeira is telling us that doesn't make a difference. The fact is that the fact is that he has every right on it, and therefore that means he even has the right to be over. Not he shouldn't be over on an Issur Esed, but if he did, it still is able to take effect. Similarly, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yechon, Halacha, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Vafilu Asan Tachrichin Lames. Also, Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion would apply even if Reuben went and used what he was given to make Tachrichim for a dead person. So, let's say, part of the Nechasim included cloth, and he took some of that cloth and made it into Tachrichim, we would also say that, therefore, that it's gone, and Shimon doesn't have any right to it. So again, the quote says, Tachrichin also Bahana. Again, the question is pshita, isn't that obvious? And the answer is similar. Shimon might argue that, look, you weren't given it in order to make it also b'hana. The original nosin could say that I didn't give it to you intending that you're going to make it also b'hana. So therefore, because after all, I would prefer my nechassim to be able to be used by people. I don't want my nechassim to be wasted unnecessarily. Kamash Malan, therefore, nevertheless, we're still saying that the fact is he didn't give it to him if he had explicitly said, obviously, if he explicitly said, I'm giving it to you, but not for you to be over on Issur Esser, or not for you to make it also Bahana, fine, whatever conditions he wants are valid, Kol Tnai Shel Mamon Kayim, but if he didn't say, then implicitly it means the guy has even the right to do these kinds of things. Okay. A related topic, now that we've established that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel in all cases, so now let's talk about a related topic in this matter of acharecha, where a person says, I'm giving you Reuven a matana, and afterwards I want it to go, after you die, I want it to go to Shimon, so now let's talk about it in terms of the dinim of the esrog, of the dalad minim. Dorash Rav Nachman bar Achisa, if a person says, Esrog zen nosam l'chava matana, if a person says to Reuven, I'm giving you this Esrog as a present, meaning not just for Sukkos, you can keep it for as long as you want, v'acharecha l'ploini, and after you die, I want it to go to Ploini to Shimon. And that would mean now there's nobody else in the chain after that. So at that point, Shimon would be able to be not only Yotze with this Esrog, he would even be able to eat it. Because if there was a Levi involved that he said Acharav Leploini, then yeah, Shimon wouldn't be able to either, but he's not supposed to Lachatchila at least. But now Shimon can do with it whatever he wants. So the result is, says Rav Nachman bar Achista, not Lerishin v'yotze boy, if the first one, if Reuven were to take that Esrog and use it for the mitzvah of Dalad Minim, Bonim Lamachlokas, would that be Rav Shimon Gamliel, then the result that we have to, whether he's Yotze or not, is going to depend on the machlokas of Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Because we know the Esrog has to be yours, it has to be Lachem, so according to Rebbe, we would say that all he has in it is Kinyan Peiris. He doesn't have Kinyan Aguf, he's not able to sell it to somebody else. Again, Rebbe had said before that if he sells it to somebody else, then it's not a valid sale, so therefore Rebbe would say it can't be considered Lachem. Again, and that understanding of Rebbe would be according to both Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, we said before, they both agreed that Rebbe says, Kinyan Peiris Lav Kinyan Aguf. So therefore, according to Rebbe, Reuben would not be able to be Yotze with that Esrog, because all he has is Kinyan Peiris. As opposed to according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, at least according to according to either explanation, actually Rav Shimon Gamliel, according to Rav Yochanan's explanation of him, according to the Rashbam's understanding of Rav Yochanan's explanation of him, that is, Rav Yochanan would say Rav Shimon Gamliel holds Kinyan Peiris Kikinyan Aguf, and therefore he not only owns the Peiris, he owns the Guf as well, and B'dieved he's able to sell it. Rish Lakish would say Kinyan Peiris Lav Kinyan Aguf, but he would say when he gave it to Reuven, he gave it to him Guf and Peiris. Well, very well, Rav Shimon Gamliel would hold that he has the Guf as well, and he's able to sell it, and therefore the result would be that he'd be able to be Yotze with it. But the Gemara says, Maskefer Rav Nachman Yitzchak. But Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, how can you say that? Ad kan pligi Rebbe Reb Shimon Gamliel Hossam. You know why Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel are arguing before when Reuven sells the Nechassim, whether he's able to and whether Shimon is able to take them back from the buyers, is Ella the Mar Sava Kinin Peres Kinin Aguf Dami or Mar Sava Kinin Peres Lakti Kinin Aguf Dami. So you have this machloikas of what we say when he has Kinin Peres, is it considered that he has Kinin Aguf as well? So again, Reb Shimon Gamliel would say that he has Kinyan Peiris, and in this particular case, it's considered like Kinyan Aguf because it's a case of Acharecha, and Rebbe would hold still not to Kinyan Aguf. So therefore, by an Esrog, but when it comes to the Peiris itself, Elohacha, but here, Reb Nachman Leitzchak points out, you have to ask, what other Peiris could there possibly be? If he's not able to be Yotze, the mitzvah with it, then what do you give it to him for? Nele, you're talking about, for example, a field. You can be talking about whether he's able, at least, even if he doesn't own the goof, even if he only has Peiris. Fine, there are Peiris available from it, namely, that he can, that he's able to collect Peiris from it and eat them. But when it comes to an Esrog, what else can we do with it? The Esrog itself is not going to produce more Peiris. The goof itself he can't eat. So necessarily he must have given it to him to fulfill the mitzvah. So how could you say that according to Rebbe he wouldn't be yotze the mitzvah with it? It has to be that he gave it to him to the extent that he can fulfill the mitzvah with it. So rather, Reb Nachman Leitzchak says no. When it comes to being yotze the mitzvah of Esrog, everybody is going to agree. Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel will both agree that he is yotze with that Esrog. Machra oy ochla, or the Bach says it should be loshen zocher, because Esrog is loshen zocher. Machra oy ochla, whatever. If he sold it or if he ate it, that would be bonal machlokas Rebbe Reb Shimon Gamliel. Then you have the machlokas of Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel. So Rebbe would hold that if he ate it, or if he sold it, Rebbe would hold. If he sold it, as we said before, then Shimon would be entitled to take it back from the buyer because it wasn't a valid sale. And if Reuven ate it, then Rebbe would hold that he would have to pay Shimon the value of it. According to Reb Shimon, Ein Lasheni, Ela Masha Shi Rishon, according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, the second one, Shimon, gets only whatever Reuven left over. And therefore, since to begin with, Reb Shimon Ben Gamliel would hold that to be, given that, as Reb Nachman Leitzchak had pointed out, the only thing he gave it for is to be yotze the mitzvah. So fine, to be yotze the mitzvah, that he can do, but anything else, so l'chatchila, that's all he should do. But if he sold it, then b'diavad it's sold, so according to him, he wouldn't have to pay back, he wouldn't have to pay Shimon for it if he ate it, and if he sold it, then it is a valid sale. The Rashbam also adds that now the reason we have to say this then in that case is you would think that otherwise maybe Rebbe would hold that again, since an Esrog itself doesn't produce Peiris, maybe Rebbe would agree that he gave it to him even to the extent that he can sell it. No, we're saying according to Rebbe, he gave it to him strictly for the purpose of doing the mitzvah of Dalad Minim with it. So Machra Ochla, if he sold it or if he ate it, then Bonal Machloikas, Rebbe Reb Shimon Gamliel, then that would depend on the Machloikas, Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel, but if he was just to be Yotze with it, says Reb Nachman Leitzchak, everybody would agree that he could be Yotze with it. Okay. Talking more about this din about Esrog, about the fact that the Esrog has to belong to you. Omer Rav Baravuna, ha'achen shekonu Esrog b'tfusas habayis. Suppose that brothers inherited from their father and they haven't yet split up the estate. They're still keeping the estate jointly for all of them. So if they used money from the undivided estate to go and go and buy an Esrog. So it depends. If now one of the brothers goes and takes the Esrog to do the mitzvah of Dalad Minim, to be Yotze with it, so it depends. Is he Yotze? Im yochol oichloi, if he's able to eat it, if he would be able to eat it without the brothers objecting, Yotze, then he's Yotze. Because it means, in other words, that since they're not makbid one another, so you could say, for example, the Rashbam says, let's say there are other asrogim available for them to eat, so they don't mind that he took one. Or you could say, for example, that it's easy for them to buy asrogim, or they were already yotze the mitzvah and they don't need it. Whatever the case, the point is, if for whatever reason they're not makbid, and he's able to eat it without their rishus. Yotze, then he's Yotze, v'im lav, and if not, if for whatever reason they would object to that, lo Yotze, then he's not Yotze, because it's not his. You could say it's partially his because they own it jointly for with Tfusas Abayis. So the Rashbam says the fact that it says lochem implies that it has to be all yours. If it had said, for example, you could take pre-eitz hadurchem, then it would mean that you could have an esrog that's owned in partnership. But now that it says that lochachtam lochem, the lochem is plural, of course, but still it means for each one of you individually. The reason it says it doesn't say the lochachta locha, the reason why it doesn't say outright singular, the Rashbam brings from the Gemara and Stuka, the reason is because it tells you that it's an individual mitzvah that you have to have. You have to have each person individually. So if it said v'lakach to l'cha, then we would if it said v'lakach to l'cha, then it would mean that It says lakachtam lochem. Now, on the one hand, lochem means that it has to belong individually to you. The reason why it doesn't say the lakachta locha, why doesn't it explicitly say it in the singular, and that would make it clear that it means that it has to actually belong to you individually. So the reason is because otherwise, for example, you would think it actually has to you have to actually own, you know, so you do have to own it. But for example, you wouldn't know that you wouldn't know, for example, that you're able to give it to somebody else. You would think that you actually have to board it with your own money or something. So if it only said lachas locha, then you wouldn't know. So by saying lochem means, in other words, that you're able to receive it as a gift from somebody else. But nonetheless, the point is that it does have to belong to you on the grounds that it says lochem. So the point is, therefore, so now, again, if he owns it individually, then fine. But if he doesn't own it individually, then it wouldn't work. So the Gemara continues, the davka de'ika estrog l'chochad b'chad. Now that works only if there's an individual estrog available for each one, or as the Rashbam had said, if there's enough money where each of them could go and buy an estrog. But not, for example, if all there was out as far as fruit, if all there was with a porish, which is a small apple, a rimon or a pomegranate, then he's not yotze, because then they're makbid. Nobody, they don't want anybody to eat it, because what do you mean? This is the only estrog we have, so therefore he doesn't have the right to eat it. And again, as we just established, if he can't eat it, then it's not really considered his. Now, the Rashbam actually calls this line. He says, "Arichus pirush shel shoytimu." This is a foolish explanation. It's not part of the Gemara. Because what's the difference? It's not a matter of whether there's a porish or rimon. It's just a matter of whether they're makbid on one another. Tosfos says the doichak. You could say that, look, what it means is, if there is available another estrog, then we would say he's not makbid if he's going to eat this estrog. But if he only has a porish or a rimon, then he's going to mind because he can't use it, because he can't use a porish or a rimon for the dalet minim. Still, Tosfos agrees that it's a bit of a doichak. The Marashal goes further. He says that actually you can well keep this line in the Gemara. It's not a pirush of shoytim. What it means is, let's say, for example, he's the eldest of the brothers. So normally they're going to have derech eretz for him. They're not going to mind if he eats it. But here, where it's the only estrog, and the fact is there's only available a porish or a rimon, which they can't use for the dalet minim. So even in that case, even if they don't say so, nevertheless, we can assume they would be makbid, and therefore he's not going to be yotze. Omer Rava. So Rava says further on this din about an estrog and about the fact that you have to own it. If one person says to the other, "I'm giving you this esrog as a present on condition that you return it to me," not levi yotza boy, so he takes it and he's yotza the mitzvah with it. Hechziro yotza. If he returns it, then he's yotza, because then he's fulfilled the condition, and therefore it comes out that he fulfilled the condition, and therefore the matana was a matana. Lo yachziro, lo yotza. But if he doesn't return it, then he won't have been yotza. If, for example, he sold it or ate it or whatever, then retroactively it turns out it wasn't a matana. Now, the question is that Rashbam and all the other Rishonim bring up is that for Tanai to be valid, you have a number of things that it had, among other things, you have Rav Meir holds, and the halacha is like Rav Meir, that you need Tanai Kofel. You need the t'nai to be repeated. You need to clearly say, if you do this, then this is going to happen. And if you don't do, and if you don't do this, then this is not going to happen. We learn that from B'nai God or B'nai Reuven, where Moshe tells them, if you cross the Yarden, then you will receive this portion in Evra Yarden. And if you don't cross the Yarden, if you don't help cross and help the Jewish people fight for Eretz Canaan, then they're going to end up getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael proper. So we learn from that there has to be t'nai kofel. Now, he's not saying, if you return it to me, it'll be a matana, and if you don't return it to me, it won't be a matana. So the Rashbam learns that that applies only to gittin v'kiddushin. And therefore, this is not gittin v'kiddushin, so it doesn't matter. On the other hand, Tosfos says that, first of all, Tosfos points out another issue as well. There's another issue with the t'nai and the maisa over here. It has to be that the t'nai and the maisa, it has to be that the t'nai and the thing that's going to happen as a result of it are two different things. And here it's the same thing because it's both within the esrog itself. So Tosfos brings up that point and says that maybe that anyway it's not like t'nai b'nei God or b'nei Reuven. But Tosfos says that maybe Rava holds you don't need that particular detail. Tosfos goes on to explain that maybe in fact here we're going according to the Chachamim and only in other Gemaras are we going according to the Meir. Other Rishonim say, first of all, this that the Rashbam is saying that this applies only to Gittin the Kiddushin, the Rambam brings such an opinion, but he rejects it. He says, look, t'nai b'nei God b'nei Reuven wasn't involved in Gittin the Kiddushin, and still needed to be doubled. So you see, therefore, that it's not applicable only to Gittin the Kiddushin. A different other Rishonim point out, discuss that after the Rambam, and discuss how we might reconcile according to them. Anyway, but the other Rishonim to say over here that Tosfos themselves actually says elsewhere, now listen, you know, the Gemara is not going in all, here we're not dealing after all with the dinim of Tanoim, we're basically dealing with the dinim of Esrog and of Acharecha and all that, so therefore the Gemara is not going into the detail that he's mentioning in the second half of the Tanai, But yes, we would have to be according to the opinion that this concept applies outside of Gittin the Kiddushin as well. Then yeah, it would mean that he had to say the whole t'nai, and the Gemara just didn't bother bringing the whole Lashon. So you have several. So in short, you have several different opinions about whether a t'nai kofel, whether the double t'nai is needed over here. According to the Rashbam, no, because not Gittin the Kiddushin. According to Tosfos elsewhere, yes, but the Gemara just didn't bother mentioning it. So the Gemara says, Kamash Malon, Rava wants to inform us with this, to Matana, Amanas Lahachsir, Shema Matana, that to give something as a present on condition that he returns it is a valid Matana. We talked about the other day the Matnas Beis Chorin. We have the case over there where a person gave all of the food and everything from his chasen, from his son's chasen, a soda, as a gift to somebody else, because he wanted that then his father, who was Mudur Hanah from him, will be able to eat by the chasen. And the friend says, in that case, I want to be makdish it. And the guy says, I didn't give it to you to be makdish. And we said there that it's not a valid matana. The difference is there he made it very clear that the matana was for the purpose of doing an end run around the nether. And therefore, it's not going to work unless the guy is able to be makdish it. But here, you're not doing it in order to get around any nether or something. You're doing it just because it has to be lochem. So therefore, as long as he has it as a matana, it is valid. He would be able now, for example, he has the ability to give it as a matana to somebody else. You have the Gemara in Sukkah that mentions, for example, that one time during Sukkot, Rav Gamliel and several of the other Chachamim were on board ship, and they only had with them the one lulav and esrog that belonged to Rav Gamliel, so he gave it as a matana to Rav Yeshua, who in turn gave it to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, who in turn gave it to Rav Akiva, and then Rav Akiva returned it to him. So that's the difference. A matana amanas lahachzir, you're able to give it to somebody else in between. You're able to do a lot of things with it in between, just as long as eventually it gets back to the noisin. So therefore, that works. So the Gemara tells in this connection, going back to the matter of Acharecha, and then we're going to talk more about this, more about these matters of Matana. So the Gemara tells, "Ahi itza dehavala dikla ba'ara did a bibi barabaya." There was a woman who owned a palm tree in the middle of land that belonged to the bibi barabaya. Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about where a person sells a tree to somebody else in his field. We talked about whether automatically he's selling him a right of way with it or not. So here, for whatever reason, this woman didn't have a right of way through the Bibi's field. So whenever she went to go and collect the to go in and cut down and collect the dates from it, have a kofid yalava, then Rabbi Bibi Barabaya would be upset at her because you're trampling my field. So she finally decided it's too much of a hassle every time that a bibi is causing me trouble with it. So she gave it to him as a matana, which will be in effect as long as your bibi is alive. And then after that, it'll be a case of acharecha. It'll be, you have it for as long as you're alive. After you're gone, after 120, then it'll go back to me or to my yorshim, she's saying. Well, ozel ihu akni in the halel of neikotten. Rabibi, in turn, went and was makna, the tree, to his young son. Meaning, Reb Shimon Gamliel had said before that the first one is able to do that. In this case, Reb Bibi is standing in the place of Reuven in the scenario before, so he's able now to give it to his son, who would be the Shimon. Now, Rashbam says, wait a minute, didn't we say before that Reb Shimon Gamliel says l'chilo, that kind of thing is also, so how could Reb Bibi Barabaya do that? So that's when he says, acharecha l'ploini, because you want that the ploini should end up with something. But here, you want, after all, that it should come back. You want that Shimon should be able to get something. But here, after all, she just told him that I'm giving it to you for your whole life. She didn't say that afterwards, implicitly, it was going to return to herself. So all it is, in other words, that she's doing it in order that this way, the Bibi won't bother her about it anymore. So therefore, that would mean he has the ability to give it to whoever he wants. So he would have the ability to give it to his son. That's not being over on what Reb Shimon had said before, that he shouldn't do that, because in this case, she's not saying that I want it to go to Shimon, somebody else. She's saying that I want it to go back to me. So it's fine for him to go and give it to somebody else instead, and it doesn't end up going back to her. Why did he do his young son? Rashbam says because he wanted to make sure this way she can't buy it from him because a cotton doesn't have the ability to be machne. So this way she wouldn't be able to go and buy it back from him, and then we're going to have the same problem all over again. Rashbam says actually maybe the word should not be b'noi cotton. It should just be b'noi, and what we mean is a son of his who was still eating, who was still supported by Rabibi. Because sometimes the Gemara calls it a thing cotton, but here the word cotton may have just been. Often they have the word bnoi, and sometimes, yeah, and sometimes the Gemara mentions cotton, so here when copyists were copying out the Gemara, maybe they added in the word cotton by mistake, says the Rashbam. Anyway, Ibn Smir Ben Hanan always says that way as well. Anyway, so that was what Reb Bibi tried to do. Omer of Huna Brei de Rishua, but of Huna Brei de Rishua says to Reb Bibi, you're doing wrong. Mishum de osu mimudar sisu, really it's supposed to be muloi, because you come from muloi, amritu mili muluyasa. Therefore you say things that are cut off. Muloi can be a name of a place, but in several places where it uses this expression in the Gemara, it explains, and the Rashbam explains over here, that it means that the Reb Bibi Barabaya is descended from Bnei Eli, descended from Hophni or Pinchas, the children of Eli. We know that they had acted wrongly in matters of the Mishkan and other things, and Hashem sent a very severe nevuah against them. One of them, one part of the nevuah, being that everybody in all the men in their family are going to die young, unless, as the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah and in Yevamos, unless they're Oisik Batoro of Gemilas Chasadim. Abaya, the Gemara says, was from that family, and Rabibi Barabaya is his son, so he's also from that family. So Rav Huna Brei de Rishua is telling him, you come from a family over there, from a damaged family, from a cut off family, and therefore you speak things that are cut off, things that have no mamoshes to them. The Rashbam brings, first of all, why we call it mimuloi. So the word mimuloi itself means cut off, but also he brings from a medrash that says that there was an actual place called Mamla where apparently a lot of these descendants of Eli lived. So in Reb Meir's time. So now Rabbi Barabaya is a couple hundred years after that, but nevertheless, like your ancestors come from this place called Mamla where many of the descendants of Eli lived. And the Rashbam also mentions the word mulya can also mean something that can also mean like a clod of dirt. So therefore it would mean like it would mean something that's a balmum. So, and the Rashbam points out, by the way, the reason why he used the word mulyosa, whether it means cut off or balmum or whatever, it's like a play on words. Because his ancestors come from a place called Mamla, therefore he uses this expression. You often find such things even in Psukim, where you'll have a nevuah about a certain place, and they'll use, and then the Navi will use a word, will use a verb that relates to the name of that place. Anyway, so he's saying, in other words, in short, he's saying to the Bibi, you don't know what you're talking about. You know when Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying that b'dieved, if Reuven sold the property, then it's a valid sale and Shimon can't get it from him, is where, to begin with, the Noisin had given it, had said that it's going to go after you to somebody else, to Shimon. but not when it's meant to go back to him himself. This woman eventually intended to get back the tree for herself or for her children after you're gone. So therefore, no, even Rav Shimon Gamliel would not hold that you have the ability to give it to somebody else. It's one thing, in other words, where he's giving him, he's taking away himself completely, and he's saying, I'm giving you the goof and the payrus, and eventually I want you to give the goof to somebody else, then fine. But here, where she is herself intended to get back the goof eventually, then it's not going to work to give it to your son. Okay. Getting back now to Matana Amanas Lach. The Gemara says, Omer Rava Omer Rav Nachman, Shur Zen Nochem Lachav Matana. If Reuven says, to Shimon, I'm giving you this ox as a present, amanas v'tachzi reuli, on condition you return it to me. Hikdishoi v'hechziroi. What would happen if Shimon was makdish the ox and then he returned it to Reuben? Hareza mukdash v'mukzer. The hekdish is valid because it was his to give as a matana, but it's also considered a valid return because Reuben can't use it anymore because it's hekdish. Nevertheless, that still works. The Rashbam points out, actually, that really this piece of the Gemara ought to be before the story of Rabbi Bar Abaya, because we mentioned Matana Amanas L'Hachzer. The Gemara should be finishing off with the matter of Matana Amanas L'Hachzer before we get back to this matter of, before we get to that matter of Acharecha. Anyway, so Rava is saying that it would be valid, and it was a valid hekdesh, and it was a valid return. So in other words, the fact that he returned it, even though now Reuben can't use it anymore, it's still considered that he returned it. Therefore, the condition was fulfilled, and therefore it turns out the matana was a valid matana. The Rashbam also points out, by the way, if the ox were to die during that time, since it's a matana, amanas l'hachzer, he would also be potter from paying because he's not a shomer of any kind. He's a makabel matana, so he's only chaya for pshia, and he wasn't pshia, died on his own. Anyway, so he returned it after he was machdish it, then it would be fine. Amalei Rava le Rav Nachman. But now Rava said this in the name of Rav Nachman, but he asks Rav Nachman, how does that work? Maya Hadre, how can you say he returned it to him? It doesn't belong to him anymore, it belongs to Hekdesh. Amalei, so Rav Nachman answers back, so what's the problem? My Chasre, so what has he made him lose? Now, what do you mean? How could he say? What do you mean? How did he make him? How did he make him lose? Now it's not worth anything anymore. It's not worth it belongs to Hekdesh. So the Tosfos HaRosh actually takes out those words. So the Tosfos HaRosh actually takes out those words. So Rav Ashi says no. It's not so simple to say that if he was makdish it and returned it, that it would be a valid return. We have to see chazinim. We have to see what he actually said when he gave it to him as a gift. If he said on condition that you return it without the word li. Well, then he returned it. The fact is, it is the same shur. It's not worth anything anymore, or it's not worth anything to him unless he redeems it from Hekdesh. Nevertheless, in other words, it would be similar to the way that we have as far as a gavlon. We learned in Bava Kamma. For example, a person steals chametz before Pesach, and then he returns it after Pesach. He can say, "Arei shalach lefanecha." He owes your chametz back. Before it was worth money, and now it's not because it's chametz sha'avala Pesach. Doesn't matter. It's still the same physical chametz. The same way, it's still the same physical shur. Meanwhile, Rava would disagree, says the Rashba and the Ritva, because Rava would hold by Gzela is one thing. It says Veheshivas Gzela, and at least he returned it. But here, where he said, I want you to return it, then it means it has to be properly returned. But Rav Ashi is saying it depends. If he didn't say Shetachzirehu Li, then fine, he returned it. But I Omale Amanas Shetachzirehu Li, but if he said, I want you to return it to me, then that means the word to li means midi de chazi le ka'omale. It has to be something which is usable by him. And it's not usable because it's hekdesh, and therefore it would mean that he wasn't makayim the t'nai, and therefore since he wasn't makayim the t'nai, then the matana never took effect in the first place, and the result is it wouldn't be mukdish at all, because it didn't belong to him to be makdish in the first place. So it depends on what law. So again, if he had said, amanas shetachzi rehu, then when Reuven received the matana, he can be makdish it, and then he can return it, and that's still considered fulfilling the tonight, because all he saw is, I'm an astra tachli reu, as long as you return this physical ox, and he did. But so therefore, so the hekdesh takes effect, and now when he returns it, the result is that now the original giver has in his yard, he has an animal that belongs to hekdesh. What he's going to do with it afterwards, either he's going to actually give it to hekdesh, or he's going to buy it back from hekdesh, as the case may be. Meanwhile, though, if Reuven, to begin with, had said, I'm an asher tachzireihu li, and Shimon went and was makdash it, then we would say that he didn't have the right to be makdash it, because Reuven was saying, I'm an asher tachzireihu li, meaning it has to be usable by me afterwards, and it's not, so therefore Shimon never had any ownership of it in the first place, therefore he can't be makdash it. And therefore he can't, and therefore so to begin with, the Matana never took effect, and therefore the hekdesh never took effect either. So that's that. So those were various dinim of Matana, and then we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with talking about other various dinim involving Matana.